ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
वैश्रिक पानी यतिखराल अवसाग्नि दृष्टिम क्रीदान अमूम भरिससार यथा करंगयो विभ्राम सौख्यवसरम प्रसमीक्षमाना। अगेन एंड अगेन कालिया लिक्ड हिज लिप्स विथ हिज बाइफर्केटेड टंग्स एज ही स्टेयर्ड एट कृष्णा with a glance full of terrible poisonous fire. But Krishna playfully circled around him just as Garuda would play with a snake. In response, Kaliya also moved about looking for an opportunity to bite the Lord. Having severely depleted the serpent's strength with his relentless circling, Sri Krishna, the origin of everything, pushed down Kaliya's raised shoulders and mounted his broad serpentine head. Thus, Lord Sri Krishna, the original master of all fine arts, began to dance. His lotus feet, deeply reddened by the touch of the numerous jewels upon the serpent's head. Tam naratam udyatam uvekshya tadatadiya gandharva siddhi municharana deva vadva prityam ridanga panavanaka vadya gita pashko bahara nutibir sahasopa sedhu. Seeing the Lord dancing, his servants in the heavenly planets, the gandharvas, siddhas, sages, charanas, and wives of the demigods, immediately arrived there. With great pleasure, they began accompanying the Lord's dancing by playing drums such as the mridangas, panavas, and anakas. They also made offerings of songs, flowers, and prayers. Purport. When the demigods and other residents of higher planetary systems became aware that Lord Sri Krishna was personally putting on a wonderful demonstration of the art of dancing, they immediately came together to offer their services. Dancing becomes more enjoyable and beautiful to watch when it is accompanied by expert drum playing, singing, and the chanting of prayers. The artistic atmosphere was also enhanced by the showering of a multitude of flowers upon Lord Sri Krishna, who was blissfully engaged in dancing upon the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. Yad yach chiro na namatenga sataika shirishnas tatam mamar dakaradanda tharon dipathai Shinaya so brahmata ulbanamas yato srim nastova man paramakushmala mahapi naga. My dear king, Kaliya had 101 prominent heads, and when one of them would not bow down, Lord Sri Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would smash that stubborn head by striking it with his feet. Then, as Kaliya entered his death throes, he began wheeling his heads around and vomiting ghastly blood from his mouths and nostrils. The serpent thus experienced extreme pain and misery. Exuding poisonous waste from his eyes, Kaliya would occasionally dare to raise one of his heads, which would breathe heavily with anger. Then the Lord would dance on it and subdue it, forcing it to bow down with his foot. The demigods took each of these exhibitions as an opportunity to worship him, the primeval personality of Godhead, with showers of flowers. My dear King Parikshit, Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all Kaliya's 1,000 hoods. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from his mouths, finally recognized Sri Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead, the supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayan. Thus, within his mind, Kaliya took shelter of the Lord. Purport. In Volume 1, Chapter 16 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada points out that whereas Kaliya previously was vomiting poison, now his poison was exhausted and he began to vomit blood. Thus he had been cleansed of the vile contamination within his heart that had manifested as serpent's venom. The word smritva, remembering, is very significant here. The wives of Kaliya were actually serious devotees of Lord Sri Krishna. And according to the acharyas, they had often tried to convince their husband to surrender to him. Finally, finding himself in unbearable agony, Kaliya remembered his wife's advice and took shelter of the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Kaliya's arch rival had traditionally been Garuda, the carrier of Vishnu, but now Kaliya realized that he was fighting an opponent who was thousands of times stronger than Garuda, and who therefore could only be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus Kaliya took shelter of Lord Sri Krishna. Om Agyan Timidandi. Heart of the great Acharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The internal reason that Kaliya had gotten such a special form of mercy from the Lord. You see, throughout Krishna's Leela in Braj Bhumi, Mathura, Dwaraka, practically everyone of the demons that came to harass his devotees, practically every one of these asuras that came to kill him, they were vanquished. They were destroyed in various ways. Putana, Krishna sucked the life air from her body and her gigantic 8-mile-long form just fell to the ground, dead. Trinavarta, who came as whirlwind, Krishna assumed heavy, heavy weight, and he crashed down to the ground and left this world. And we find Vatsasura also killed by being whirled around and smashed to the ground. Dhenukasura was whirled around and killed, thrown into the trees. Aghasura, Krishna expanded himself and suffocated him, his life air being forced out of his body. Bakasura, Krishna bifurcated his beak and killed him in this way. So in this way, Pralambasura, Keshi, Krishna killed all the demons. What is the difference between all these asuras and Kaliya? Kaliya was as envious, was as ferocious, and was dangerous as any of the others. It is described he had thousands of hoods and 101 prominent heads. They were filled with poison and fire. He was massive. He completely poisoned the whole lake of Vrindavan, and he actually did more damage than the other asuras. Because the other asuras in Vrindavan, Krishna killed them all, but he never really harmed any of the Brijvasis. But Kaliya killed all the cows and cowherd boys. By drinking the poison of the waters, they all died. Krishna, by his merciful glance, had to bring them back to life. Such a terrible, terrible, envious asura. But Krishna, he could have easily killed him like the others. But he gave Kaliya special mercy. He danced upon his hoods and caused him so much pain and suffering again and again and again and again that ultimately Kaliya surrendered to Krishna and became his devotee. The only asura we find in the Braj Leela that actually surrendered to Krishna and became his devotee. In his life, all others ultimately had to surrender to Krishna in the form of death and receive his mercy in that way. So why is this? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, even though Kaliya was such a terrible, envious demon, his wives were very simple and pure-hearted devotees of Sri Krishna. And they were always praying that when will my husband become a devotee? And these wives, the Naga Patnis, they were again and again and again preaching to their husband, Kaliya, trying to convince him to become a devotee and take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and be his servant. But you know, the ego of this Kaliya was so much that obviously he considered the words of his wives to be sentimental and just not practical and not at all conducive to his prosperity, to his demoniac way of life. So it is described here that his wives, they were actually disgusted with him. But at the same time, they were very chaste and faithful. They didn't leave him. They were always praying for his welfare and preaching to him. And because of the good wishes of these Vaishnavas who had taken shelter of his lotus feet, and because of their natural affection for Kaliya, Krishna made a rare exception to this demon and purified his heart and made him into a devotee. This is the power of the prayer of a Vaishnava. We find examples of this. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find the example of Amogha, who was the son-in-law of Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Amogha was such an envious person. He was like Kaliya, in the sense that through from his mouth the venom of criticism against Vaishnavas was constantly flowing. Srila Prabhupada used to say that one who criticizes Vaishnava is a snake, an envious snake. Why did he specifically call criticizers of Vaishnavas snakes? Often he would say they are black snakes. Because what comes from the mouth of a snake? Venom, poison. If that venom enters into your body, what does it do? It kills you. It causes a fever and death. So when the venom of blasphemy of Vaishnavas
enters into our ears. It infects our consciousness and poisons us and kills our faith. And for a devotee, faith is life. We have no other life than our faith in Krishna. The faith we have in Guru, Vaishnava, and Krishna is the basis and the essence of our whole existence in spiritual life. And if that faith is poisoned, we are spiritually dead. Therefore, the Shastra says, if one criticizes a Vaishnava, you have to cut out his tongue. Kill yourself. Because you've heard it. As an atonement for listening. Or you have to leave that place immediately. Srila Prabhupada explained, in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, Kali Yuga, there is so much of this. Better you leave. Just leave that place. No matter what, it's a matter of life and death. To stay means to be sitting with a venomous serpent, biting you, poisoning you. The difference is a snake can only kill your body, which has to die anyway. But those who criticize Vaishnavas, they are killing your very soul. They are killing all your instincts for spirituality and devotion to God. So Kaliya, so much poison was flowing from his mouth, that from that poison, all the cowherd boys, the gopas, and all the cows were killed. That is the power of such serpentine poison. But Krishna revived them. And yet, how merciful Krishna was to this serpent. He didn't deserve it himself. Similarly, this Amogha, he was like Kaliya. The poison of Vaishnava Aparad was constantly flowing from his mouth. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he invited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day to take prasad at his house. And Sarvabhauma and his wife, they cooked wonderful preparations. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya stood at the door with a stick to protect Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from having to hear the abusive language of this Amogha. By all means, he had to keep him away. But as Lord Gaurasundar was enjoying his nice prasad, Sarvabhauma was very anxious to bring him more and more. As soon as any preparation became halfway the bowl, he would immediately fill it again. So as he went to the kitchen to get more, Amogha just somehow or other appeared in the room. And he started condemning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ah, you nonsense. You call yourself a sannyasi? Your only business is to enjoy your senses and feed your belly? Look at all these preparations. Look at all this opulence and luxurious, tasteful dishes you are eating. This is not the way of a sannyasi's life. This is the life of a gross sense enjoyer. You are a hypocrite. You are condemned. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was always very humble when anyone said anything against him. He just sat and accepted whatever Amogha was saying. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being a true Vaishnav, could not tolerate hearing any Vaishnav or Krishna being criticized. Amani namanadena. This means a devotee can tolerate and bear any insult upon himself gratefully. Whatever you are saying, my dear sir, you are only speaking one drop of the ocean of my bad qualities. This is the way a devotee thinks. Whatever you are saying against me, really, Krishna is speaking through you. just to reveal to me my own shortcomings. But when a devotee hears another Vaishnava or Krishna being criticized, he cannot tolerate it. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was such a peace-loving, gentle, saintly person. He would not even harm the most insignificant ant. He was so loving and forgiving to everyone. But when he heard his own son-in-law, his own family member, abusing the Lord, he picked up a stick and ran at him to beat him. And God knows what he would have done if he would have caught him. But Amoga, being very agile and young, he ran for his life. And Sarvabhauma was chasing after him to beat him severely. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Just give me more prasad. I'm still hungry. And Sarvabhauma, oh, all right, then I will give you more prasad. Anyways, this Amoga, because of his offense, there will be a reaction. Krishna must punish a person who offends his devotee. What to speak of offending him himself? So within days, Amoga contracted severe cholera. And he was in such a painful, suffering condition. Terrible. Some of our doctors here could explain what type of misery a man has to go through when he's dying of cholera. He was in morbid agony, laying on his bed at the verge of death, helpless and hopeless. No one could save him. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was thinking, very good. It is the suitable reaction for what he has done. Such a Vaishnava was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because he had spiritual vision. He knew for the offense he had done, he's going to go to hell again and again and again. But because he's suffering so terribly, through dying in this way, it is the only means of being relieved of the sin that he had committed by this aparad, by this offense. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that although Sarvabhauma may be thinking like this, in his heart he loved this man. He was his own son-in-law. He was actually only thinking of his good and his welfare. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came to the deathbed of Amoga, and he put his lotus hand upon the heart of Amoga, and he said, "My dear Amoga, you have the heart of a Brahman. The heart of a Brahman is meant to be a pure and clean place for Lord Sri Krishna to reside. Why have you allowed it to become so contaminated? Why have you allowed the filth of envy to enter into it? Now, Amoga, you rise and chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." At that time, Amoga, he sat up, he stood up, he started chanting the holy names and dancing in transcendental ecstasy. And then as he was dancing, with his hand, he began to slap his own face until it was getting all red and very much injured. And they asked him, "Why are you beating your face?" He said, "Because this mouth has spit out so many insults against the Lord and his devotees." He said, "But now it is purified, because now from your mouth is the glorification of the Lord and his devotees. And that glorification can purify any of our previous sins." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, after seeing Amoga delivered into pure devotional service, he asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Why did you do such a nice thing for this person?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, because of his connection to you, he has no qualities, he didn't deserve anything. But because a great Vaishnav like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was affectionate toward him, because he had a connection to him, therefore, it is my greatest pleasure to deliver him and give him pure love of God. So we find here in Kaliya's story a very similar philosophical understanding. Why did Krishna go in to kill Kaliya? Why did he go on that Kadamba tree and jump into the lake? It is because Kaliya had killed his devotees. Kaliya had created a poison that such an offense to the Lord's devotees and cows. He was a real Vaishnava aparadi. And previously, he committed a great offense against Garuda, the Lord's own carrier. Such a demon. Of all the demons that came into Vrindavan, he was really terrible, really offensive, to such an extreme. But because his wives were devotees, who were praying for him, who were praying to Krishna for the deliverance of their husband, and because of their natural affection toward him, out of love for his devotees, the Nagapatnis, Lord Sri Krishna purified Kaliya. But how did he purify him? In the same way he purified Amoga. First he had to go through excruciating, torturous pain just to get all this poison out. Similarly, we all have these poisonous qualities within our own hearts. Lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, illusion. They are all there. It is all like poison. And this poison, when in our consciousness, how much over the years it has infected and contaminated other people, and how many sinful activities it has caused us to commit. Who can deny? Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna, whether he personally dances upon our heads, or through his mercy and through the agency of material nature, he personally arranges tribulations, sufferings, difficulties, problems, pain, insult, injury. When all these things come upon a devotee realizes that this is Krishna dancing upon my head. Every suffering, every pain, every insult that comes upon us is like one of the feet of Krishna just dancing upon my head, smashing me, removing all this poison, removing all this contamination. Therefore, a devotee welcomes every opportunity of distress as the gift of God, because he knows that Krishna's beautiful artistic dancing, the demigods were so happy to see this dancing. They were playing drums and singing songs and showering flowers, but Kaliya was not celebrating like the demigods. Kaliya was just in utter distress. Similarly, when devotees see these conditions in human society, when Krishna starts dancing on the heads of sinful people to release the poison within their hearts, devotees are jubilant. They play mridangas and sing songs and shower flowers Very good, Krishna. Well done, well done. But the demons themselves, they are like Kaliya. They're just being crushed and crushed and crushed and crushed. But ultimately the devotee knows that, because of this condition, that person is ultimately going to take shelter of Krishna. It's the only way for him. Therefore, devotees rejoice. People, even Prabhupada, said, yes, the Third World War will purify this earth. To them, they just see the Third World War, these bombs, is just Krishna's lotus feet, just dancing on the head of this Kaliya-like society, this serpentine society full of venom and poison. And ultimately, those feet are meant to just purify, through the agency of this type of suffering, purify humanity to the point where they realize, Krishna, I am yours. I surrender. And while the bombs are dropping, the devotees are singing kirtans, playing mridangas, and showering flowers on Radha Gopinath. This is compassion. It is not cruel, hard-heartedness. It is compassion. Because real compassion is to pray that every soul can find the supreme joy of taking shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Because even so-called pious, prosperous conditions of society, still everyone has to face the terrible tragedy of the pain of death. And everyone has to see the horrible death of all their loved ones around them. No matter how nice the society is, no matter how peaceful and clean the air may be. This place is a place of suffering. Only taking shelter of Krishna is the relief. Therefore, a devotee welcomes any opportunity to become purified by the lotus feet of Krishna, however he decides to dance upon our heads. And as Krishna is dancing upon our heads, we are simply more and more and more taking shelter of him. But what is the power of the blessings of a Vaishnava? This story is exhibiting that because Kaliya had the blessings of his wives, Krishna showed special mercy to him. Therefore, by all means, at all costs, the first and foremost priority of our life is to receive the heartfelt blessings and become very dear to a devotee. To become dear to a great devotee of the Lord is the supreme perfection of life, because when you become dear to a devotee, you are dear to Krishna. And Krishna, what he does may be a mystery, but he will send you back to Godhead simply because of you are endeared by a devotee of the Lord. And this is the proof. The blessings and the prayers of a great Vaishnav never go in vain. They are absolute, as much as Krishna is absolute. And they will have their effect. Krishna will say, just as Krishna gives special attention to his devotee to do whatever is required to send him back to Godhead, similarly Krishna will give that same attention to anyone who is dear to his devotee. And we have seen in our own congregation people who are completely against this movement, but because their child has become a devotee and they are naturally dear to them, even though they may be offensive and everything else, in this life or the next, they all become devotees. They ultimately all become liberated and go back to Godhead. Undoubtedly, to the extreme of Hiranyakashipu. In the same way of the Nagapatnis, Prahlad Maharaj was always praying for his father, always preaching to his father. And because of those prayers, and because of his natural affection for Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakashipu was liberated by the Lord himself. So if you love your parents, if you love your aunties and uncles, and if you love your children, and if you love all these other people that are near and dear to you, who are telling you, oh, please come home. If you really want to help them, you become dear to Krishna. You become a pure Vaishnav, like the Nagapatnis, or like Sarvabhauma. And to the degree you become dear to the Lord, everything dear to you becomes dear to the Lord. And Krishna will give special affection, special attention, and guaranteed he will liberate them. And to the degree you surrender your life to Krishna, to that degree, he will take special concern for everything in relationship in your life. That is his promise. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is said by Rupa Goswami that when we chant the holy name, Krishna is personally dancing upon our tongue. The tongue is like a hood of a serpent, is it not? It's the closest thing in our body that resembles the hood of a serpent. Most of our tongues are like serpents. All the poisons they emit through all the nonsense talk and all the criticism. Huh? Just chant Hare Krishna. Just let Krishna dance upon our tongue. And all the poisons will start coming out. And when they come out, it will hurt very bad. It will be very painful. But just allow him to continue dancing. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And very soon we will also, if we simply become dear to the Vaishnavas and continue allowing Krishna to dance upon our serpentine hooded tongue, we are sure to be delivered, purified of all contaminations. And our original natural love of God revived. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
These Nagpatnis were great devotees of the Lord, and they wanted their demoniac husband to become surrendered to Krishna. In this very chapter, these Nagpatnis are praying to that extent that if he doesn't surrender to Krishna, it's fine. When he dies, Krishna will kill him. Then we will be very happy, and then we will be in loving service of Krishna. So is it proper for a devotee or a housewife to think that way, even if she is chased or surrendered to Krishna, that if her husband is not taking Krishna consciousness seriously, to think that way, that it's okay if he is not surrendering, it's fine. When he dies, then I will be devoting more time in Krishna consciousness.
The Nagapatnis, it is said in next verse, they are thinking, if this atheist, my husband, is killed by the punishment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then let him be killed. We will become widows and engage in worship of the Supreme Lord. Hari Harivo. Nitai Gaud Premanandi. But then the ladies noticed Kaliya's facial expression and other bodily features. And they understood that Kaliya had indeed taken shelter of the Lord within his mind, seeing that he was manifesting symptoms of humility, remorse, regret, and doubt. They thought, just see how fortunate we are. Our husband has become a Vaishnava. Therefore, we must now endeavor to protect him. They felt affection for their repentant husband and severe distress because of his miserable position, and thus all together they went into the presence of the Supreme Lord. Such a person should be thinking that, Krishna, whatever your will, if you want this person to continue to torture me, then let me become purified by your mercy coming through him or her. But by all means, somehow or other, bring him or her to your lotus feet. However you arrange it, my Lord, I cannot tell you how. I am only praying, by your expert devices, bring him to your lotus feet. Bring him to the shelter of your mercy.
This doubt used to come in our mind that this Nagapatni, or we take some examples of other housewives also in the scriptures, about Ravan's wife also, or this Brahmin's wife who had given some food to Krishna. This Matajis, they were staying in the house in front of the husband. Now these husbands were criticizing for Krishna, they were criticizing God. Now, they, being a woman, they cannot go out from the house. And they were listening to those criticisms from Krishna. On the other hand, they were not getting the association of devotees also because they cannot go out from the house. So how it is possible for them to maintain that faith? Because you say that the faith is the most important thing. Now, these husbands, they were criticizing for the devotees, they were criticizing Krishna. On the other hand, how it was possible for them to maintain their spiritual life and being strong enough without having an association, at the same time listening to the criticism also?
They had association with each other. The Brahmins' wives, the Nagapatnis, they would always... How often is the husband home? Especially demoniac husbands, who are always very much anxious for more and more and more. So through the day they would be together, chanting Krishna's glories, talking Krishna's katha. The Brahmins, they were not critical of Krishna. They never said anything against Krishna at home. They were actually nice Brahmins. They were nice people. They were very pious. They were very much in the mode of goodness. They never criticized others. But simply, they were so puffed up and proud because of their learning, they wouldn't humble themselves and surrender. So there was never nothing negative in the house of the Yajnik Brahmins' wives. Husbands were very pious and very good. There was no negativity. Only because of all of their good qualities, they were too proud to surrender. That was their only defect. But amongst themselves, they were always singing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And in regard to Kaliya, the Nagapatnis together, they were like this. And by the strength of their association, they lived in the same house together, they were co-wives. By the strength of their association with one another, they were all together preaching to their husband, Kaliya. And because under the circumstances that they were in, obviously they never listened to any blasphemy. They were like lotus flowers because their hearts and consciousness were so deeply rooted together in the service of the Lord, in the remembrance of the Lord. They were not taking the association of their husband. They were simply praying for the welfare of their husband. They would not listen to the topics or do the activities of their demoniac husband.
Hmm?
Huh?
What about Ravan's wife?
Ravan's wife was the same as Nagapatni's. She was constantly preaching to Ravana to surrender to Ram and to be kind upon Sita. She was never influenced by his blasphemy. But they are very special souls. We cannot imitate them. They are special, eternally celebrated souls in the Lord's Leela. They have a very special position. But they illustrate that if you have that type of faith and devotion, even in the most difficult conditions of life, you can remain pure.
Maharaj, we have slight independence with us, free will, and it depends on us how we use that. Now, either we can use it for Krishna consciousness or for sense enjoyment. So now, it may take an endeavor to slight degree for us now to choose what. Should we choose Krishna consciousness or sense enjoyment? There's a slight endeavor on our part. Now, if suppose we have a slight Krishna conscious desire, how do we have the understanding that even the slight Krishna conscious desire is total 100% mercy of Krishna? There's nothing that on our own effort that whatever slight Krishna conscious desire. How do we have this understanding?
How do we what? Let somebody else. You're very hard to understand. What is the end of it? Honestly and sincerely, the path of the previous acharyas, as given by Guru and Vaishnavas, then whatever comes into your life is directly Krishna's mercy. And if you are acting independent, it is also Krishna's mercy, coming through the laws of, coming through your own karmic conditions of life. You don't use your fertile brain to try to understand all of these things that are unapproachable by you. You are an insignificant jiva and a conditioned soul. You just use your good intelligence for one thing only. Not to figure out why this is happening and why that is happening, but just, am I humbly serving according to the direction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? Am I doing that? Am I doing exactly what Krishna wants me to do, which is coming through the association of Vaishnavas and the association of spiritual master? Am I doing it? If I'm doing it, let anything come. It's all Krishna's mercy to purify me. If I am not, if I'm doing what I want, separate desires, then we should know that I am in the wrong path. Don't consider whether pleasure or pain or honor or dishonor or happiness or distress or heat or cold. Don't consider any of these things when they come to you. Only consider one thing. Am I following the path of the previous acharyas? If I am, everything is perfect. If I'm not, everything is useless, imperfect. That's all. That you can understand. That any sincere and honest soul can understand. And that is all you have to understand. Don't complicate your mind. Do you understand? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Trying to find all symbolic reasons for everything. Justifications. This type of complication of the mind will simply bewilder your intelligence. Am I doing what Guru Maharaj and Krishna want? That's all. If you are, let anything come. Just welcome it with an open heart. You don't have to figure it out. It's all His mercy.
Due to our free will, there is always the fear that
if we cause displeasure to the Vaishnavas, Guru Maharaj, there is always a fear in the heart that if we cause displeasure to the Guru Maharaj and the Vaishnavas, what should we do?
That fear is very healthy. We should all have that fear. We should be scared to death of committing an offense or displeasing the Vaishnavas. If there was a large pit of venomous serpents, all hungry, and you were standing on the brink of that cliff, about to fall in, would you be afraid? No? You would be afraid? You should be thousands of times more afraid to displease the Vaishnavas or commit an offense of the Vaishnavas than falling in that pit of snakes. We should be very much afraid of that. But that fear will impel us not with just being in paranoia all day, but it will impel us to positive service. We're so afraid of that. It's like if a man is walking on a tightrope and there's 1,000 feet drop. He's afraid of falling, correct? But is his afraid of falling just is he simply afraid? No, that fear is causing complete concentration on the rope that he's walking on. He's so afraid to make a wrong move that he's just completely, intensely concentrating on the rope that he's walking on. That type of fear we should have. That to serve, we should be so concentrated and intensely walking the rope of bhakti. To chant the holy names, to serve the Vaishnavas, to hear the glories of the Lord, to pray to the Lord, to remember to the Lord. We should be so attentive and so intense in following the positive principles of Krishna consciousness, knowing that if I'm inattentive, I will displease the Vaishnavas and I will commit an offense. Huh? So that fear should impel you to positive, concentrated devotional activities and consciousness. So go on being afraid. You have faith. The person walking the tightrope has complete faith that if I just stay on this rope, I'm going to reach the other end. But if I'm inattentive and start looking other directions, then I'm finished. So we have to have complete faith in the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Yasya devi para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru. Complete faith in the path of bhakti. And utter fear of Maya and her influences. And her paramount influence of Maya is to cause us to commit offenses against the devotees.
This is the problem that always used to be there in our heart, that because we are in a congregation of devotees, sometimes we don't intentionally have any, so to say, some problem or something, but because that person is not able to, that devotee might not be able to understand us properly, he feels that we have offended him. And that's why
An offense is not someone who simply... Offenses that are serious against our spiritual life are not innocent mistakes that we make. But offenses are, even though we know better, we misbehave. Those offenses Krishna will hold us to very severely. But just innocent mistakes, Krishna will overlook them. What is your intention? What is your motive? Krishna sees from the inside out. Man sees from the outside in. We see what a person does, and we judge a man by what he does. But Krishna is within your heart. He sees what is his motive. What is his aspiration? And he sees what you are doing from that vision. So if you're honestly, humbly trying to serve the Vaishnavas, but you make mistakes and they are displeased with you, to Krishna that is a humorous thing. Because you're sincere, when you see that they're displeased with you, you are corrected, and then you will do it their way. That's not an offense. Their displeasure, if they see you're sincere and humble, their displeasure is actually simply they're very pleased to be displeased to teach you the right way. But if our behavior is crooked and our motive is crooked and we're deliberately disobeying even after hearing so many instructions, then that displeasure is... Displeasing is not always an offense. We can be simply lazy but not envious, and we're displeasing the Vaishnavas. That means we are simply not receiving the mercy of Krishna. We're not accepting the mercy of Krishna. But an offense is actually a positive assertion of our envious nature. You can offend a Vaishnava and please him. If you offend a good Vaishnava, he'll be pleased to hear insults upon himself. He'll think, oh, very nice. You can please a Vaishnava very nicely by criticizing him. But you're displeasing Krishna like anything. And he's going to hold you to it like anything. So we must understand properly with our good intelligence how to become innocent, humble, obedient servant of the Vaishnavas. Then there can be no offense. Mistakes there may be, but no offense.
Maharaj, you said amanina manadina, like, but suppose like such insults are if you are ignored. Now, you said this is Krishna revealing our shortcomings. Now, that's okay to tolerate it. But also, we have to respect everyone. How do we respect the source of this distress? How do we respect?
As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has demonstrated, if someone comes to offend you, you should offer all respect to that person. But if in offending you, he is causing too much disturbance to the mission of the Lord, then you have to defend. You're not defending yourself. You're defending what you represent. Sometimes that may be. It's like our own Guru Maharaj. Sometimes people would criticize him to his disciples. And Srila Prabhupada, although he was more humble than a blade of grass, without any doubt, he would have to defend. But he wouldn't defend to defend his own prestige. But he knew that these crooked people were destroying the faith of his disciples. He was actually defending them, not himself. By rebuking and defeating the blasphemy against him, He was actually defending the faith of his devotees. He was not defending himself. He would never defend himself. So we have to use our good intelligence, and until we have such good intelligence, we need spiritual guidance in this way. That if someone offends us, we should be grateful that Krishna is so nicely speaking through this person. It should be a symphony to our ears to hear insults. We should give all respect and be grateful. But if someone is blaspheming another Vaishnava, or someone is impeding other devotees' faith and service, then we must become like fire and defend.
Just now you said that if another Vaishnava insults another person, you should not keep quiet and fight for it. But what happens if you spoil such relationship? I mean, just because you are trying to help some other god brother or sister, because that person simply blamed the person, and you're spoiling the relation with the one who was blaming you. What to do in such situation?
Is that person a devotee?
Yes.
Who's speaking?
Yes.
The relationship is already spoiled. The question is how to repair the relationship. If you have any concern for that person, you will not want that person to continue, because that person is destroying his or her own spiritual life. So you should do one of two things. You should either preach the proper philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that this criticism of Vaishnavas is the greatest disease in all of the creation, it's the only way Maya can destroy this mission. She has no other way into this mission except when devotees start quarreling and criticizing and offending each other. Then she can break down the whole dignity of the mission. Otherwise, through all of these external forces, she cannot. As long as the devotees are united and respect each other and performing proper sadhana with faith in Guru, there's nothing Maya can do to stop this mission from growing and expanding for the blessed deliverance of all humanity. But where criticism of Vaishnavas is residing, it is the number one topmost disease that is so infectious because it ruins our faith. And when that faith is ruined, the mission is disturbed. Therefore, we have to protect our Guru's mission, and we have to protect what our Guru has given us, faith. If you hear criticism of Vaishnavas, your faith will be destroyed. Or at the least, it will be very severely damaged. This Shraddha is a gift of Guru. You have to protect it, and you have to share it with others. So you cannot expose it. So therefore, preach to the person that this offense is to Vaishnavas. It's a very serious disease. I cannot listen to this. Look at all the good qualities that that person has. Every Vaishnava has millions of good qualities, but also a few defects. Why should we look at the defects? Why should we be like a fly? A person may have a beautiful, healthy body, but if there's one tiny little infectious sore on the body, where will the fly go? Huh? Only to that infectious sore. Completely neglects all the beautiful, healthy parts of your body and just goes to that and sucks it and drinks it and enjoys it. So this fly mentality, we must understand. And it's contagious. So therefore, two things we must do. If we can preach and that person will listen, we should preach. If not, we should get out of there. Immediately. Just say, "My dear sir, I'm sorry. I cannot listen to anything against another Vaishnava. I have to go." And go. And by doing that, if you say you spoiled your relationship, what? Very good. Let it be spoiled. Because such, that is not the relationship of association with a devotee. A person may be a devotee, but on that level, you're no longer devotees. On that level, you become demons. It's a fact. It's demoniac. Even if we're devotees, if we criticize others, that's a demoniac quality. So with all humility and respect, my dear sir, my Guru Maharaj, and all the Shastras say that hearing criticism of Vaishnava is death to our soul, so I must go. And then you go. And if it spoils your relationship, harivo. And if it doesn't spoil your relationship, harivo. You relate on another platform. But never relate to anyone on this platform. But don't sit and listen. Never sit and listen. Just be honest. You can be very humble, very gentle. "My dear sir, I cannot hear any criticism of Vaishnavas. This is the order of my guru. Either you have to stop or I must go." And then you must go. Any other questions?
To have love between each other, we should trust each other. Suppose, how should we, like, at least we can try from our side, how we gain others' trust on us? Like, how do we gain it? Because if we don't trust, there is no love.
Of course, if criticism is constructive, that is healthy. But if it is simply useless gossip criticism, then we must go. But there is also constructive criticism. If someone is speaking about somebody else's faults to teach you what you should be careful of, that's not criticism. Sometimes we mark out, this devotee has done like this, 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 and this, and this is why, this is the lesson we should learn from it. That is not criticism. That is construction. It has, even if we criticize another devotee, but if it has a positive motive and a positive effect in our consciousness, that we're actually learning something from that person's experience, then we should listen. That's nice. But if it's just simply for the sake of demeaning a person's character, run for your life. Harivo. Hold your ears and chant, "Krishna, save me." How to develop trust? By becoming the servant of the servant of the servant. By living according to the principles of your spiritual master and Krishna. By honestly trying to follow those teachings. By helping one another in his mission, we develop trust. And from that trust, we'll develop love. You have to be the honest well-wisher and the humble servant of other Vaishnavas. If you do that, then you are generating an atmosphere of trust. You see, generally, unless we live our life in such a way that people can trust us, usually we're not able to trust anyone else. That is the problem. Why even the most trusting people do not trust because the whole world is a mirror of your own mind. If you're trying to be a trustful person yourself, you'll recognize someone who's trustworthy. But if you're a cheater, you'll see your own cheating propensity upon everybody. Simple living, high thinking. You honestly try to become just a servant. You honestly just try to live a good life in the service of Guru Maharaj. And if you have that consciousness, even though you may have so many contaminations, if that's your motive in life, then if somebody is trustworthy, naturally Krishna will award you that trust. But if you're duplicitous, Krishna will not give you the faith to trust any good soul. The greatest enemy is duplicity. To the degree we're duplicitous, we see everyone as being duplicitous. To the degree we're striving to be simple and pure, we will recognize those qualities in others. And when we're pure, we'll see everyone is pure. Even the demons, we'll see good in them. This is the fact that he's a murderer and a rapist, and it's not a very important thing. Actually, you see, he said something nice to this old lady. There's some good in him. There's good hope for him. Everything else is not very important. We just have to deal with it. A pure soul will see like that.